Hello, everybody. It's Kyle Cruz, and you're listening to the KC at the Movies podcast. I'd sound a little different. I know I sound a little different. I'm currently away at the moment. I'm not in my normal recording setup, so I'm not near my normal microphone or anything like that. I have listened to the audio a little bit. It sounds okay. I think I'll still go with it. I still think I'm pretty clear to hear. But yeah, that's just a one-off. I'll be back home actually in a couple of weeks' time, but I wanted to put this out there because I wanted to talk Oscars, just finally get that out of the way so we don't have to talk about Oscars again for the rest of the year. And I just realized as well my throat is also playing up as well. I don't know what's going on there, but it was playing up this afternoon and then it went away and it's come back again. So I hope I'm not getting sick, but that is also a obstacle, I guess, that we need to overcome. Other than the audio. Now, as well as the Oscars, I do want to talk about this podcast, sorry, this week's film, which is going to be The Moment, Charli XCX's film that she starred in, produced, and I believe got a story by credit for, and produced it with A24 as well. And I want to talk about my thoughts on that because that's probably like the thing I've seen recently that I want to talk about. That I haven't talked about yet. But first, let's talk about it. The 98th Annual Academy Awards happened this week. If you listen to this podcast, it definitely did it already happen. I was supposed to do this like a couple of days ago, and then I decided against it because I just didn't think it was I just didn't think I was ready enough for it. But now tonight I'm feeling good, so I'm putting it out there now. The 98th Annual Academy Awards happened. I missed it live for the first time. I think I said this in the last podcast, but I missed it live for the first time ever. And I had to watch the later broadcast, which was on at like 9 p.m. And then it went for like 3.5 hours, which, it's a normal thing with the Oscars for it to go over time, but I don't think it's ever gone for 3.5 hours before. Like I started this thing at 9, and then it finished at like 1:30. That's more than 3 hours. Well, 3.5. So yeah, it started at 9, 10 past 9 or something, and then it finished at like 1:30, and I had to be up for work like the very next day, so I couldn't really stay and bask in it for a little bit and just marinate on the winners and everything. I had to go like straight to bed. I had to get off that rush and go straight to bed. Now that didn't really work for me because, the Oscars is like my Super Bowl. As long as I get annoyed fucking talking about the race and everything like that, I still tune in every year. I still watch, and I still get that high when I'm watching it as well. But this year was a little weird. It was a very weird ceremony. I think it was because maybe it was because I didn't tune in live for it. But it was just a very strange ceremony. Some of Conan's bits like really fell flat for me. I didn't really think a lot of them were funny. I love the Casablanca bit. I love the monologue. The opening monologue was good. His delivery on the joke about the ballerina in opera, which thank God that's fucking over as well. Holy fucking shit, that was annoying to fucking traverse, man. Like online, everywhere people were talking about his comment about the ballet and opera. Like you motherfuckers watch ballet and opera. I think someone described it so well. It's like he was talking about the ballet and opera. And then a bunch of people who haven't seen ballet and opera came in and attacked him for it. And look, come on. It's like if you really love ballet and opera, if you really love going to it, yeah, sure, like go off. But most of the people that are going against Chalamet already have that premeditated hate towards Chalamet. But and like they are watching ballet and opera. You're not fucking watching ballet and opera. Go fuck yourself. Like you're watching it. Personally, I haven't really watched any ballet and opera. I think I've seen like a couple of ballet shows, but it just wasn't my thing. And I just think opera. I've seen it like recorded before, And it just, I don't know, it just wasn't my thing. I respect the people behind it, I respect how talented they are, but it's just not really my thing. I think I'll stick to musicals when it comes to that kind of like live theater stuff. But yeah, I just thought it was really funny, and I'm glad that that discourse is now going to be over, because holy shit, that was so fucking stupid. That was so stupid. Anyway, Conan took shots at Timmy in the opening monologue, and I thought that was pretty funny. He took it really well, I think. And then yeah, some of the Casablanca one was good. The vertical video joke was good. I mean, the opening monologue, like I said, in the opening skit was really good too. I enjoyed that. I wish there was a few more best picture films in there, but I'll take what I can get. And I thought it was pretty funny. But yeah, there's a lot of jokes where I was just like, it just wasn't that funny. And usually Conan was like, he's got me going. Like, I love Conan. I think he's the best host the Oscars have had other than Billy Crystal. He just usually gets me going, and I just a lot of jokes fell flat for me during the broadcast. So I don't know. And can we talk about the amount of bullshit that, like, the skits people are doing? A lot of the presenters were very flat as well. Bill Pullman and Lewis Pullman as well. They especially were like, what is fucking going on here? He's like, is Bill waiting for his next line? Is Lewis waiting for his next line? Is the teleprompter like delayed or something? Because they were like very rough to watch, and you know, they're both very charismatic people, but the Oscars made them see like come off as like these really flat entertainers that really don't have any chemistry, even though they're fucking father and son. Yeah, they don't have really that much chemistry, so. There's a lot of that throughout the thing. When Javier Bardem presented with Priyanka Chopra, when he said "No to war and free Palestine," she was, you know, you can tell she wasn't ready for that. She wasn't ready for that. And I'm not jumping on Javier Bardem for that. I'm really actually I'm really glad he said that. You could tell a lot of things. I think it was the joke that Conan said about Kumail Nanjiani as well. I don't know if he was ready for that one as well, but he took it well on the chin. I thought his talking about presenters. I thought he was the best presenter of the night with the two short films one. And the joke about the speeches being longer than the short films themselves, I thought was really funny. The bridesmaid skit was good. Those girls are really talented, and I love that. I love the delivery of all those lines, especially Stellan Skarsgård getting mentioned twice, I think. I thought that was good, but then everything else was just like not very good. I enjoyed the musical performances. I wish there was more musical performances. Or just show more of the movies. Like, I know they do show the best picture things, but I seem to have this problem that every year with the Oscars where they don't really lean into the craft of everything. It's all more about putting on a just a stupid show. And I guess that's, you know, that's what it's always been. But I think the Oscars used to have a lot more merit. Or maybe that was rose-colored glasses when I was a kid. I don't know. I used to watch this a lot with mum. So maybe you know. It could be age cynicism. I don't know. I was just sitting there. I was just like, this is, I'm just not feeling the energy. I'm just not feeling it. And I was mostly just one of these awards to be read out, you know, and done. But fucking 3.5 hours, dude. 3.5 hours. Okay, anyway, we'll go for the awards. First up was the first, the new award, which was Best Casting. And I thought that was going to go to Sinners, but I wanted it to go to Marty Supreme. Marty Supreme, by the way, came away with nothing during the ceremony. Absolutely nothing. I don't think I got anything. Yeah, it came away with nothing. I'm just looking at the winners now. Didn't go away with anything, which I thought for sure there might be like a dark horse casting win, but no, nothing for Marty Supreme. Anyway, casting went to Cassandra Kaloo, could it? Oh my God, Cassandra, I'm so sorry. Cassandra Kalukindis for One Battle After Another. Cool. All right. Great movie. I thought his speech about her being the first one to get the Oscar out of the group was pretty funny, and I think Paul took that well. But then little did she know that Paul was going to fucking sweep later on. Okay. Best visual effects, of course, went to Avatar: Fire and Ash. There's no surprise there. Best makeup and hairstyling, of course, went to Frankenstein. No surprise there as well. Best costume design went to Kate Hawley for Frankenstein. No surprise there. And best production design went to Frankenstein. Almost all of the technical awards went to Frankenstein, which is what I predicted. It would have been cool to see some dark horse wins, but you know, it's always going to be the one that has Guillermo del Toro, he's an Oscar darling, and the film does deserve those awards. It does look really good. It does, in terms of its art direction. Best sound went to F1. Best film editing went to One Battle After Another. I think I changed my pick at the very last minute for that, so that was really good. I was happy about that. Best cinematography went to Autumn Dorel d'Occupour for Sinners, which makes her the first ever woman to win the best cinematography Oscar ever. And that was really cool to see. I loved her speech. I thought her speech was fantastic. So I'm really happy for her. Cinematography for Sinners was awesome. It was one of my favorite parts of Sinners was how it looked. So fuck yeah, Autumn. Best original song, of course, went to Golden from K-pop Demon Hunters. Best original score went to Sinners, Ludwig Göransson. One of my favorite scores of the year. Not my favorite, not my pick, but I'm really happy that it won because I absolutely love that score. Best animated short went to The Girl Who Cried Pearls. Best live action short went to The Singers and two people exchanging saliva. I think this was the third tie ever in this category. I think it was the third tie. Maybe I get the number wrong, but it was a tie. Kamau handled that really. He handled that really well when that happened. No, like surprise, kind of like fuck. What do we do? Like he handled it really well, and hats off to him for getting through that one. Best documentary short went to All the Empty Rooms. Best documentary feature was a surprise. It went to No, Mr. Nobody Against Putin, which I really thought it was going to go to The Perfect Neighbor. I think The Perfect Neighbor deserved that Oscar. I didn't watch Nobody Against Putin, but I really thought that was going to go to The Perfect Neighbor. Based on just how that was made. Looking back on the clips and during the ceremony, I was looking at Mr. Nobody Against Putin. I was like, okay, it looks like a normal documentary, but cool subject matter, but a normal documentary. What I loved about The Perfect Neighbor was its actual style and the way it was made. Entirely police body cam footage and the editing throughout, like certain shots chosen to put underneath, like voiceover and stuff like that, whether it's from the citizens of that street, residents of that street, sorry, the police themselves, and the fucking aforementioned, I keep saying aforementioned for a lot of things now, titular, sorry, titular, Perfect Neighbor. And yeah, I really loved how that movie was edited. So, really thought that was going to win. It did not. That surprised me a lot. Best international feature, sentimental value. Joachim Trier finally got his flowers after putting in some films for best international feature. And it rightly so went to sentimental value. Brazil did not get that 2-for-2 win, which I would, like I said, I wouldn't be mad if it did. But I'm also really, really happy it went to sentimental value, one of my favorite movies of 2025. Best animated feature, no surprise here, went to K-pop Demon Hunters. Best adapted screenplay went to One Battle After Another from Paul Thomas Anderson, his first win of the night. Best original screenplay went to, deservedly, Ryan Coogler for Sinners. And best supporting actress was the one that we were all not so sure about, but that went to Amy Madigan for Weapons. Wow, I just didn't think they were going to swing that way, but that's really cool, and what a great way to put horror on the map. Can we please go back and put Toni Collette in the Best Actor Oscar for Hereditary? Please. Or Florence Pugh for Midsommar. Like, come on. What are we doing? If I could go back in time and do that, I fucking would, but I'm not the Academy, so I can't. And I don't have a time machine. Best supporting actor went to Sean Penn for One Battle After Another. Dude wasn't even there. Kieran Culkin made a great joke of him not being there. I think he handled that really well. Of course he wasn't going to be there. So yeah, there we go. He's won three Oscars now. I think the first one's for Mystic River, then the second one's for Milk, and now this one's for One Battle After Another. Jesus Christ. Best actress went to Jessie Buckley from Hamnet. She had a great speech as well, very jovial, very funny, but also very grateful as well. I really, really liked her speech, and a shout out to Ireland as well. Great to see her there. And then best actor, it was the shake-up. The shake-up did it. The shake-up did it. It happened. Michael B. Jordan took home the best actor Oscar for Sinners. Which, like I've said in my last podcast, he wasn't my pick, but I'm not angry or mad that this happened. I mean, none of them, I'm not really angry or mad about any of these awards. The only thing I'm angry or mad about is not Nova Choice getting not getting nominated for anything, but I digress. We've heard that already. So, happy for Michael B. Jordan. Loved his speech. Great performance. One of his best performances so far. And then Best Director, Paul Thomas Anderson, swoops in once again to pick up the Best Director Oscar for One Battle After Another. That's his second win of the night. And finally, One Battle After Another took home Best Picture, which was also really great to see. I thought Paul Thomas Anderson had three great speeches. Every single speech was great. I loved how he dedicated the, I think it was the adapted screenplay one. He dedicated that to his kids. And then Best Picture, he had that great line about all the Best Picture nominees in 1975, and saying that none of them is a Best Picture, none of them was like the best film. It's just whatever mood you're in that day to watch. And I thought that was fantastic because I agree wholeheartedly with all of like with what he said, and I agree wholeheartedly with like all you know, most of the time with all the Best Picture nominees. It's just like, yes, one is going to take that award, but at the same time, it's such a great pool of nominations as well, because these are all really great movies that were nominated. And yeah, that was it. That was all the awards wrapped up. That was the night. Like I said, fucking long ass ceremony, but I stuck around for it, and I was happy to see pretty much all of these wins happen. There's a few I was a bit, you know, like I couldn't really care less about, but most of these I was very, very happy with. And yeah, I'm just glad it's over. It's over. Oscars discourse is over. I can stop fucking talking about Oscars for three podcasts in a row. And we can move on. I just want to mention as well, because now we have 24 awards. I did Gold Derby, as we know, if you watched my Twitch stream. I did Gold Derby for the first time this year, and I ended up going 18 for 24, which was, I think that's not my record, but it's still pretty good. I usually do around 18, 19, 20 around there. I never get like the full amount, or even close to it. But I always skirt around like 18, 19, 20, which is I'm pretty happy with that. Like it's not a race. I'm not betting or anything like that. But it was just cool to see. I like numbers, not when it has to relate to math, but like I like that kind of like the collection, like that those collection. You know, when numbers are collected like that, lists, I don't know what I'm saying, man. Fucking hell. Anyway, let's not talk about the Oscars. That's over. We're done for another year. Let's move on. I want to talk about the film that I wanted to, that I chose for this podcast, and that is The Moment. It is a movie that Charlie had in the works for quite a bit, for a few years, I think now. I think she'd been working on it for, yeah, a few years. And then she got it to play, I believe, was the first festival Sundance? I think the first festival was Sundance, but it played at Sundance, or did it play at TIFF? Maybe I'm getting that wrong. Sorry about my typing, I'm just trying to get into fucking. I'm just trying to get the letterbox at the moment so I can get these details down. Okay, so The Moment is a. It's a film. Directed by Aiden Zemiri. It stars Charli XCX, as I've mentioned, Alexander Skarsgård, Rosanna Arquette, Jamie Dimitrov from, you might know him from Fleabag, the guy with the teeth from Fleabag. Rachel Sennett's in it as well, Kate Berlant, and then I think. Oh, there's the scene with Kylie Jenner as well, which I'll talk about in a bit. But. That's funny. Just when you're on Letterboxd, if you look up The Moment on Letterboxd, it changes the Letterboxd changes its logo to Letterbox CXCX XCX, and that's really cool. The film. So before I talk about The Moment, I just want to talk about just get some things out of the way, some housekeeping, some context. I am a fucking massive Charli XCX fan. Very, very big. If you allow me just to quickly indulge you with talking about my journey with her, I will. So basically, I started listening to her during the pandemic when around where it first started. It was right after Charlie was released, because I believe Charlie came out in September of 2019, and then I started listening to Charlie herself, because that album blew up like on people's lists from 2019, and then in January 2020, I started listening to her, and I was like, holy shit, this is the Charlie XCX that did Boom Clap and Break the Rules, and I love it. I was like, this can't be the same. And then I was listening to the album, and I was like, this is incredible. This is like some of the best fucking music I've ever heard. Holy shit. Like, and then I just listened to it and on end. My roommates were fucking so sick of it. Because I listened to a lot really loudly in my headphones as well. I think looking back on it, I wouldn't do that now, knowing that the damage I've done to my ears. But, yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I fell in love with her. Went back, listened to her old discography. Again, not as great as what she, you know, of the newest discography, but I did have some, I guess, new love for it. Appreciation, I guess. Not love, I guess, appreciation. Then I listened to a look at the B-sides, and then fucking Bob's Your Uncle. Like, that was it. The Journey was there. And then not long after that, How I'm Feeling Now came out, Crash, and then Brat. So I was just got wrapped up in it all. I got hugely into her, and I've now seen her live. I have a tattoo of her on my leg. I'm a massive Charlie XCX fan. It's kind of an understatement to say I'm a fan. So going into this movie, I was extremely excited because not only is I'm a fan of Charlie's music, I'm a fan of Charlie herself. I'm a fan of like her artistic process. I've seen a lot of interviews which she talks about her artistic process and what art means to her and her intention with her art. And that's just hugely inspiring for me. I love just hearing her talk about all that stuff. You might not hear it in the music sometimes, but she is very smart. She's a very smart musician. And I just absolutely, I'm inspired by it. I love it. And so I was going into this movie, I heard about the premise and I was like, this is brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant. I love it. No pun intended with the song there, but I absolutely love this premise. It's basically, instead of doing a concert film, she is doing a mockumentary style feature about the making of a Brat Tour concert film, which is just, that's my shit. That's what I feel like I would have done as well. I don't think I would have put out, like, if I was a musician, I wouldn't put out the concert film. I'd put out this kind of thing because I love the mockumentary style. I love satire. And that's exactly what you get here with the moment. So that's all I knew. I basically didn't know the premise. Well, I knew the premise, but I didn't know like what actually transpires throughout the film. So that's all I knew. So going in, I had the context of, you know, being Charlie's fan for a very long time and, seeing how much he blew up with the Brat album and what that did for her, the amount of success that brought her as well, the amount of attention that brought her. I think that's important to say as well, that the attention that brought her as well. I just love that, like, you know, you look at something like the Taylor Swift Eras film, for example, which, you know, she did that because she's Taylor Swift and she has a lot of albums, and I get that's why she did it. But before that, you know, she has these concert films based off all these albums. I'm not just singling out Taylor here. I'm just saying that she is probably like an example that does come to mind when you think of like mainstream pop stars. But Charlie didn't want to do that with this movie. She is, you know, we don't get a Brat tour film. We don't get a Brat concert tour film. We get this. We get the moment. And it's not only just the mockumentary of the tour itself, like her putting it all together. It's all of the anxieties and the obstacles and the overwhelming feelings that come with becoming that successful so quickly and trying to follow up on that success and, you know, deliver on the moment and capitalize on it. And I thought that she captured that, and Aidan Zamiri as well captured that really, really well in this movie. Because, you know, despite playing a heightened version of herself, Charlie is like really raw and authentic, you know, as she always is with her music and her art. But I wouldn't be surprised, you know, some of the events as well. I'm just they're really weird and they're very over the top, especially when Alexander Skarsgård's character gets involved, and he's putting on the he's helping put on the concert. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the emotional core that is present in this movie is reminiscent of what Charlie experienced during the moment of her life when Brat was released, and the amount of success and attention that Brat bought her. Brought her. Because, you know, out of nowhere she's got angels, yes, but now out of nowhere she's got new angels. She's got new fans that are coming to her and people that just want to see more of her. You put out something, people want more of it. I think it speaks a lot about being a pop star nowadays, especially with, you know, the need to fulfill your dreams of your fan base and your supporters, and but also, like, you know, with that fulfillment, the struggle to still sane, still stay sane, and be a human being. I can't imagine that, like, everything was so smooth sailing when Brat came out. I can't imagine that, like, you know, it wasn't just, you know, upwards from there, and then Charlie, you know, she'd fucking headline Coachella, but it's something so new for her. She's usually in the background. She's, you know, she says it in the song, on Brat. She's usually in the background, but now she's in the forefront, and that is scary for her. And while, yeah, sorry, on the surface level, it's fun and exciting, and, you know, party, party, party. It is scary for her, and she comes off as very vulnerable in the film. That's why I still see it as her being still herself, her authentic self. I think it comes across very clearly. I do wish there was a few more. I'm with some people here. I do wish we heard a few more of her songs, not just from Brat, but just like the whole discography. But I'm also like, I don't think it needs to be in there. I thought it'd be really nice because I thought it'd be like, oh, we had a sick soundtrack for this movie. But no, a lot of the songs are the ones that are happening live on stage. There's two great sequences. I love the sequence at fuck, what was it? The sympathy isn't that is it. Sympathy is a knife rehearsal, because then you get the I think it's the smiling lady with Alexander Skarsgård's character. I thought that was really, really funny. And then you get this amazing moment, which is probably my favorite moment in the movie, is her doing, I might say something stupid, but she's like suspended in the air in this ridiculous costume and caked in this ridiculous makeup, that is what people would expect from her. Especially, like, you know, Alexander Skarsgård comes in, he's trying to like sanitize the show. Charlie's trying to put in like a nightclub. Her friend is help her trying to help her put on a nightclub experience, but then Alexander Skarsgård comes in and he goes, "Well, we want to appeal to the wider audience." And he, you know, it's kind of like a studio coming in and taking charge of a film from like an independent filmmaker or anything like that, or a filmmaker that's, you know, easy to puppeteer or to control. It brings me back to this really, really great line that I watched in this YouTube video years and years and years and years ago. I forget who said it, but it basically, it relates to film, it relates to this kind of music, but it's like, can an artist be truly make their art within the confines of Hollywood? And you could see this process of like an independent artist, because Charlie, you know, she's, I wouldn't say she's independent, but she, like I said, she's always been in the background. She's always been that runner up, that underdog. And part of that is what makes Charlie so special. And you know, I love seeing her get her flowers finally, and like seeing her in the forefront. But part of Charlie's charm back when I first started listening to her was like, you're gonna blow up, like you're gonna blow up, and the world is not ready for what you're going to do. Because like I felt this is only the beginning, and it fucking was. And then she comes out with Brat. Crash was an interesting experiment, we'll say that. But I'm really glad she still went, made that album, and still, you know, has that a part of her journey, because then she goes on to make Brat, which, you know, is a career-defining piece of art and album. And then she gets to make this and bring this out of it as well. So it's been a very like fruitful journey, you know, I think for artist and supporter or fan for it. And I just, this movie was just everything that I expected and more. Everything, I just loved it. I absolutely loved this movie. And yes, I love Charlie. I think it works much more effectively if you are a fan of Charlie going in, or if you know, at least know about Charlie going in. I'd expect just to like read like a Wikipedia article or something, or listen to a few songs before you go in to watch this one, because not knowing who Charlie is, it's just, I just don't think it's going to hit the same way. So I think if you have that kind of like that context going in of knowing Charlie and being a fan of Charlie's music, I think it's going to be much more rewarding when you go in to do the initial watch. I can't wait to rewatch this with friends who are Charlie fans as well, and talk to them, sorry, about the film and what they think about it. Because right now it's only me and a few people online on the Charlie XCX subreddit, but I want to actually talk to someone in real life, you know, about this film, because I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. I love the moment. I love Charlie XCX. One of my favorite movies of the year so far, for sure. So yeah, go watch The Moment. I believe it's out now in digital. I couldn't really catch it anywhere near me, so I had to check it out in digital, which sucks. I really would love to see it in the theater, but you know, time, money, and life. I just couldn't do it during this time. So moving on to what I have been watching, and guys, I'm telling you, it's not going to be much. This podcast was going to be a quick one. It was really going to be a quick one. I'm sorry. I caught up on Fire Force in terms of anime. I caught up on Fire Force. Actually, I'm not caught up on Fire Force. I'm 2 episodes behind. But I did watch about 4 episodes of the new season of Fire Force. It's fucking awesome. I love it. Despite all the fan service and anything like that, which I have huge problems with, but the show around it, the world building, the sound design, especially the characters, I do love Fire Force. I think it's great. Jujutsu Kaisen, it doesn't fucking stop, man. It's on fire. I'm loving it. That I am up to date too. And I was seeing the memes going around of, I think it's, is it Higurama, who's the lawyer, and I saw all the memes of him going around and everything, and I thought that was really funny. But Jujutsu Kaisen, it just doesn't stop. It's fucking awesome. It's such good shonen. It's so good, man. And MAPPA's just, they're just off. They're just off. They're going off with all this animation and all this fucking different styles and everything. I think I've talked about it already with the Maki episode 4, but what MAPPA's doing at the moment is just beyond what my comprehension of anime could ever be. Like, it's just crazy. It is crazy what they're doing at the moment. I do want to catch up to Frieren, but I just haven't done it yet. I haven't caught up to Frieren yet. I think there's like 6 episodes out at the moment for Frieren. Just haven't caught up to it yet. I will get around to it. I'm also reading the manga for Frieren as well. I'm up to volume 5 of that. Yeah, I will get around to season 2 eventually. I think there's only gonna be 10 episodes this season, but I will get up to date with Frieren, because I do love Frieren. And in terms of anime, I'm trying to think. I think that's it for now with anime. I'm just waiting till this current season's over, and then I'm gonna start some other anime. I'm thinking about getting into Dead Demons, Dead Dead Destruction, and maybe Soul Eater, because the same guy did Fire Force, and I've heard Soul Eater will be my shit. So maybe Soul Eater. We'll see. I don't know. And then in terms of TV, I'm watching The Pitt, of course. I'm still watching The Pitt. The Pitt's The Pitt. It's The Godfather. It's pretty much it. Like, there's not much to say about it. It's just fucking awesome. It's every week is amazing. I was like 3 episodes behind, and that binge was just fucking, it just felt like time didn't even exist, because that show is so good. I'm absolutely loving it. I love the twist we've got this season, without spoiling it. You know how season 1 had a twist, we'll say, which lasted a few episodes. Season 2's little twist is very interesting, and I love the way it's being handled at the moment. It's fantastic television. I'll just say it's fantastic television. I stayed on HBO and I started watching Task as well, which is the new, is it the Mark Anglesby? Brad Anglesby, sorry, Brad Anglesby. He's the same guy that did Mayor of Easttown, which I really, really enjoyed from a few years ago with Kate Winslet. Really enjoyed that show. So when I found out he was doing a show with Mark Ruffalo about a task force, which is another thing of mine. I love when task force or teams get put together. Big fan of that. So I was like, well, I've got to check in for this. And then it came out and I never did. And then all the episodes are out now. And I still hadn't. And then last night I started it. And I'm on episode 5, I believe, of 7. So I'm nearly finished. But really, really enjoying it. I love it. I love Mark Ruffalo. I love, is it Fabian Frankel as Grasso? I love him. I love, who's fucking playing? The team, the whole task force is great. I love the whole task force. Aaliyah and Lizzie. Lizzie Stover. Lizzie Stover, that's her name. And then Tom Pelfrey as Robbie is great too. Really, really great. And I always love seeing Emilia Jones and things, so that was really good when she popped up. I've loved everything Emilia Jones has been in so far, and she's like one of my kind of like low-key favorite actresses at the moment. And when she showed up as Maeve, I was like, oh shit, is that who I think it is? Check the casting, I was like, there we go, fucking Emilia Jones, beautiful. Everyone on the show is really good, really, really good. Now, staying on HBO again, I started Heat of Rivalry. My friend came over a couple of weeks ago and she sat us down and she wanted us to watch the first episode. And then we ended up watching, I think, the first 3 episodes of the show. And then that is also only got 7 episodes. So I'm on episode, I think 5 of that one as well. No, 6. I've got the finale left. And I really enjoyed that. A lot of dude butt. But I've got no problem with that at all. I kind of wish they went full frontal, but at the same time, I get that's probably like a nudity clause or in their contracts not to do that. But I just, like, they were really nicely filmed. I think the cinematography is really nice. The lighting especially is gorgeous and wonderful. But I don't know. I just kind of wanted something more out of the sex scenes. I don't know. I just is that just me? I don't know. Is that just me? I just kind of wanted something a bit more of the sex scenes. Like, they are full on having sex, but I kind of want a bit more. Is that too wrong? Is that too much to ask? I kind of just wanted a bit more. I don't in like porn or anything like that or anything super graphic, but just like a little bit more, you know, going on. Like maybe a dong. Like, can we get a dong, please? Like, we're on HBO for fuck's sake. Anyway, I digress. I'm half joking. I'm really enjoying the show. I think it's really good. Great performances. Those actors look fire at the Oscars as well. Both those actors. Yeah, can't wait to finish it. Can't wait to give it a finish this weekend. I'll finish probably Task. After I watch the new Pit, I'll finish Task and then I will do, Heated Rivalry. I'll finish with that, hopefully this weekend. And then by the next podcast, I would have watched it all. And I know I said, just to wrap things up, I know I said that I would talk about Resident Evil as well on the next podcast, but, I completely forgot I was going away. I don't know how I really forgot I was going away. And that's kind of just come out of nowhere. So I haven't watched Resident Evil yet. I've been pretty busy at work this week. And just busy with everything. Like, my sister's birthday was this week. It was a big milestone for her. So we had a lot of celebrations of her. So a lot of life stuff happened. So I didn't get around to watching Resident Evil. But I'll probably catch it this weekend. I've got some time this weekend after the shows. So I'll probably catch it this weekend. I'm looking forward to talking about Resident Evil and getting really into the weeds of that on the next podcast, when you can hear me, you know, speak normally, speak in a how I normally speak, instead of sounding like I'm on like a gaming headset, which I'm currently am on a gaming headset, but, you know, like on an old phone or something. Like, it's going to sound really weird. I'm sorry for that. It's going to sound really weird when it comes out. But hopefully you can stick with it and still discern the audio that you hear as well. This will come out when it comes out. Like I said, I've got a lot of stuff to do. I'm looking after a dog here as well, so I've just got a lot of duties, I'll say. I'm also working on the weekend as well, so this will come out when it comes out. Just want to say as well, real quickly, I also said last week that I wasn't going to be streaming. Obviously, I didn't stream tonight. Nothing was put up on my socials or anything, so I didn't stream tonight. I won't be streaming next week because I'm still here, but streaming will go back to normal the week after. Same time, 8 p.m. on Twitch, Resident Evil Remake. I'm loving it. It's so good, but it's also really fucking hard because I have no idea what I'm doing. but yeah, anyway, that's coming back in 2 weeks, and the podcast probably another podcast will be released after, probably in 2 weeks as well, and we'll talk about Resident Evil then, like fucking all going all in on Resident Evil. We'll just say that we're going all in on Resident Evil. All right, thanks for listening to this podcast. Thanks for putting up with this shitty fucking audio. You're a fucking legend if you listen to this, all of us. And I love you. I hope you have a good weekend, week, day, whatever it is, whenever this comes out, whenever you listen to this thing. And I will talk to you next time. Take care.